This is Barbara Ridenour returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 22, 2015. We'll continue with the obituaries. Ariana Marie Gordon, infant daughter of Lakeisha Elnora Ray and Timothy Duane Gordon Sr., died Monday, May 4, 2015. private family services will be held. Graceland, Fairlawn Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Darlene June Jones, 81, of Decatur, died January 20, 2015. An informal memorial celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday in the Lions Club of Moequa, with Reverend Chuck Banning officiating. Bonnie Lee Schultz, 78, of Decatur, died Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. Funeral services celebrating her life will be held at noon Saturday, May 23rd, at St. John's Lutheran Church of Decatur. Visitation will be 2 hours before service at the church. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be made to St. John's Lutheran Church. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care are in charge of arrangements. Bonnie Lee Schultz, 78, of Decatur, died Wednesday, May 20th. Pauline Schumard, 85, of Crystal Falls, died Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. Jacob's Plow Funeral Home of Crystal Falls is in charge of arrangements. Virginia Walker, 92, of Decatur, died Thursday, May 14, 2015. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. today at Walker Funeral Service. Homegoing service will be at 12 noon on Saturday, May 23rd, at the Church of the Living God, PGT, Temple No. 3, with visitation 1 hour before the service. Burial is in Macon County Memorial Park. Walker Funeral Service and Care are in charge of arrangements. Now we'll turn to the opinion page and continue with letters to the editor. Hopefully, Rauner will change his budget plans. I read in the Herald and Review last week where House Speaker Michael Madigan and Democrats in Springfield put a stop to Governor Bruce Rauner's budget proposal to cut $1.5 billion from Medicaid social services at all levels. Might I mention hospitals, schooling from the lowest level to highest, etc.? Rauner's spokesman, Lance Trover, called Madigan's maneuvering a political theater. Well, if that was just a play, it was a very fine one. The actors were on cue, and the ending was wonderful. The cast should take a bow. Bravo. Our new governor campaigned in part on a transparency policy on government. Rauner said it should be open and accountable. The taxpayers should know where their money is going, and there will be deep cuts to fill the budget hole. If all Rauner said is true, then I ask, how does bringing in new staff at a pay of $170,000 plus a year help? Why the closed doors and private meetings? Compared to most of the governor's proposal, it seems to me now it would have been better to keep the state's temporary income tax hike for a couple more years. I'm a property and homeowner who does not like to see taxes go up or new ones added, nor my water bill increase by 25%, but that's a Decatur issue. We all have made honest mistakes in our lives. Some could be fixed and others not. I just hope our new governor, Rauner's mistakes, have been and will be honest ones. Signed, Keith D. Gable, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the first ever Heroicon, Decatur's first tabletop gaming convention. The event was held last weekend at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel and was organized by Decatur Gamers to raise money for its Games for Troops organization. That organization sends games to troops stationed across the country. The three-day event featured more than 150 games and vendors. More than 300 people signed up to attend the event. Thumbs up to college graduates, especially those at Millikan University and Richland Community College. Commencement exercises are in full swing, and congrats to all of those who have earned degrees through hard work and perseverance. Thumbs up to Mike Sorensen, Macon County's official historian, who was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Illinois State Historical Society. Sorensen, who had a lengthy career with the Illinois State Archives before retiring, is actively involved in several projects, including biographies of the members of the Staley Bears and processing records of the Decatur YWCA for a new history room in the Decatur Library. Sorensen also developed an exhibit on Illinois State Capitol that still stands outside the governor's office. Thumbs up to Beautify Decatur Coalition annual Downtown Planters Project, which saw a group of volunteers plant flowers all over the downtown area. The third annual event filled about 60 containers with a variety of flowers, grasses, and shrubs. New this year was the addition of perennials, which the organizers hope will bring some color to the downtown during our winter. Thumbs up to the dedication of the renovated MacArthur High School's Alumni Walk. The Alumni Walk, which graces the new renovated high school, brought in $44,000 to the Decatur Public Schools Foundation. That money will be used to fund classroom grants for educational extras, field trips, and equipment that the school budget can't stretch to cover. Bricks on the Walk, there is a similar one at Eisenhower High School, costs between $100 and $500 and can be personalized. The bricks can be purchased at the foundation. To find out more, call 217-424-3300. That's 424-3300. Thumbs up to Competitive Edge Barbershop and Decatur Memorial Hospital, which are teaming up to make sure men get their blood pressure checked. The program, A Shave, A Haircut, and A Blood Pressure Test, is focused on preventing high blood pressure among African American men. The barbers at Competitive Edge have been trained to make the blood pressure checks, and customers will receive a free haircut if they visit their doctor after the blood pressure check and get a signature. Kane, dodging celebrities' daggers. People were yelling "What's up?" at one another during Budweiser ads. Jennifer Lopez wore a memorably revealing dress to the Grammys. In Meet the Parents, Robert De Niro asked, "I have nipples, Greg, could you milk me?" A product we hadn't imagined 5 years earlier. iPods were new, brand new. It was the year 2000, and we were introduced to Jared Fogle. The Indiana man had lost 245 pounds on what was called the Subway diet. He ate twice daily at the sandwich shop and added some walking to his regimen. 12 months and 700 subs later, he was on his way to starring in a national television campaign for Subway. Fogle became a national punchline, but a punchline who still won. Subway kept using him in advertisements. Hack comedians kept using him in the same jokes about him. But the public loved Fogle, and his homespun Midwest modesty and humility continued to make him look like everyone's everyday hero. He was, in spite of all odds against him, successful just for being a good guy. Think of things that have come and gone, fads that have run through our culture at double or triple speed. Monday's fresh face is played out by Friday. Viral video, which is certainly what we would have called Fogle spots, had the term existed at the time, chews up and spits out individuals every day. In 2015, you'd better have more than one trick in your bag, because we'll be through it your first one in days, if not hours. And here was Fogel, trotting out his aw shucks personality in 300 commercials, which all said essentially the same thing. This guy was huge. He ate the right Subway sandwiches and little else. He exercised. What's your excuse for not doing the same, America? And we loved being asked the question so much, and we loved the idea that we could pretend sandwiches loaded with cheese and mayonnaise were healthy for us, even though Fogel wasn't saying that. We were willing to sit through the same commercial campaign for 8 years without a hint of rebellion. Fogel was asking for and receiving $5,000 to $10,000 in appearance fees. His work eventually led him to a reported estimated worth of $15 million. We constantly hear and read stories about people who lose their way when too much success comes their way. Too much adulation, too much money, too much of anything sinks so many individuals that we might find ourselves wondering if that kind of success is worth the potential outcomes. How many zeros can there be at the back of your estimated wealth before you publicly melt down, disgrace yourself and others, and have your name turn into a verb, as in, he really jonesed it. That one up, didn't he? Jonesed that one up, didn't he? But Fogel had all of those opportunities. The largest skeleton in his closet is a divorce. But he's remarried, and the worst thing that's been said about him is he got a little pudgy, putting on 20 pounds a few years back. And now he's back as a Subway TV pitchman. As the $5 footlong, step aside for a bit. You may be among those weary of Fogel continuing to be on your television set. But there are plenty of personalities in our orbit who end up being irritants for far worse reasons. Petty theft, unacceptable late-night behavior, drug use, even creating a ruckus at Coachella and getting slapped. Even if only for his ability to essentially publicly remain what we think he is, Fogel should be saluted. Dear Abby, mother's alcoholism poses a serious threat to her baby. Dear Abby, I just realized I'm 6 weeks pregnant. I have always wanted to start a family and raise children with my fiancé, but I have a big problem. I am an alcoholic and have been struggling with this issue for a few years. I don't know the effect this could have on my baby, but I know it isn't good. My fiancé also drinks a lot, and our home situation isn't the greatest for a child because of it. What can I do that would be helpful in my circumstances? I don't want to put my baby's life at risk. I tried AA in the past, but it was unsuccessful. I'm afraid I'm destroying my family before it started. Train wreck in Virginia. Dear train wreck, you are right to be concerned. If you plan to have this baby, it's important that you find a gynecologist and quit drinking immediately. If you can't find the strength to do it for yourself, then do it for the sake of your little one. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there is no safe time to drink alcohol during pregnancy. Alcohol can cause problems for the developing baby throughout pregnancy, including before a woman knows she's pregnant. Drinking alcohol in the first 3 months of pregnancy can cause the baby to have abnormal facial features, growth and central nervous system problems. For example, low birth weight, behavioral problems can occur from drinking alcohol any time during pregnancy. The baby's brain is developing throughout the pregnancy and can be affected by exposure to alcohol any time. If a woman is drinking alcohol during pregnancy, it's never too late to stop. The sooner a woman stops drinking, the better it will be for both her baby and herself. Dear Abby, I've been with my girlfriend Kendra for 4 years. We're ready to take our relationship to the next level, but I'm starting to have second thoughts because of her mother. To put it simply, she's not a nice woman and she doesn't have any friends. Her husband died a few years ago, which makes her very much alone. Her only social life is Kendra. Abby, she thinks of me as a threat to their relationship, and she's trying everything in her power to break us up. She says negative things about me to Kendra, and she's rude to me at all times. She says she will not give us her blessing if we decide to marry. Because we live only 10 minutes from her and have no possibility of moving farther away, Is it possible to have a healthy marriage with such a cancer in our lives? Or would our marriage be doomed from the start? Do I stay or do I go? Unsure in Pennsylvania. Dear Unsure, unfortunately no one can make this decision for you. Much depends on whether Kendra can recognize how unhealthy her relationship is with her mother and distance herself emotionally. While love can conquer almost everything, unless she can do that and not allow herself to feel guilty for being happy, marriage to Kendra could be like competing in a marathon with one foot encased in a barrel of cement. I'm not saying don't do it, but pointing out that if you do it, it will be a challenge. Editorial. Some don't understand the question. Maybe some didn't understand the question. It was posed in this space a few weeks ago by Tracy, a self-described 55-year-old white woman from Texas who is sick and tired of the mounting litany of police violence against unarmed African-American boys and men. She wanted to know what action she, as an average person, might take to bring about change. What can I do? She asked. I thought the question so powerful and poignant that I decided to devote a series of columns to answering it. I invited readers to offer answers of their own. It will be sometime deep in summer before I finish digging out from under the 700-plus emails that poured in as a result. Many brought intriguing and creative suggestions that we will discuss in future columns. But many other readers thought the answer lay with black people improving their behavior. For instance, decried a breakdown of the black family. Another wrote, always obey, no matter what, a police officer. Still another advised, stop fornicating, live a conservative style. Coincidentally enough, as I was reading these emails, police in Dover, Delaware were releasing dash cam video of a 2013 incident in which Corporal Thomas Webster, responding to a call of a fight at a gas station, rolls up on Latif Dickerson, who is standing there with his hands raised. Webster orders him to the ground. As Dickerson, a 30-year-old black man, is complying, Webster kicks him in the face, breaking his jaw and knocking him unconscious. That damning video notwithstanding, a grand jury initially declined to indict Webster and returned him to duty. Only this month did a second jury finally indict him on the felony assault charges. So I wrote to some of my correspondents, asking them to explain how experiences such as these reflect the breakdown of the black family. Obey the police? That's what Dickerson was doing when he was kicked. To date, I have seen no satisfactory response. Let's be clear. The question of what African-American people can and should do in the cause of African-American uplift is a valid one. But to suggest that uplift is the answer to police brutality is to miss the point. The issue here is not what can black people do to improve themselves. Rather, it is what can we do to stop cops from assaulting them for no reason. We might begin with something as simple as self-evident as demanding police accountability. It should tell you something that it took two grand juries to indict Webster, even though that video leaves no doubt of his guilt. It should also tell you something that he did this knowing the camera was on. Obviously, he didn't fear any consequences. Why should he? America's bizarre terror of black men is so epidemic that a police officer will often get the benefit of the doubt, even when there is no doubt. The reasoning goes something like this. If the cops beat you, they must have had a reason, and obviously you did something wrong or they wouldn't have shot you. In a nation where those naive assumptions are very common, who can be surprised that indictments and convictions of bad cops are very rare? In such a nation, the brazen misbehavior of Corporal Webster becomes not simply predictable, but inevitable. So it's deeply frustrating that some of us believe police brutality can be fixed by African-American self-improvement. You will never solve any problem you can't even bring yourself to face. Copyright 2015, the Decatur Herald and Review. In state news, Illinois prison chief quits, Springfield. Governor Bruce Rauner's pick to run the state's embattled prison system has quit after just 2 months on the job. Donald Stolworthy, acting director of the Illinois Department of Corrections, submitted his resignation to the Republican governor this week, but will remain on the state payroll while a search for a replacement is underway. We have accepted the resignation of Acting Director Stolworthy. At our request, he has agreed to help during the transition period to continue our transformation of the Department of Corrections while we identify the leader that will succeed him, Rauner spokesperson Catherine Kelly said in an email Friday. Today, Stolworthy was named to the $150,200 post on March 8th after serving as an official in the U.S. State Department's Prison Bureau. The 54-year-old Arlington, Virginia resident replaced S.A. Tony Godinez, who had overseen the prison agency since 2011. The governor's office provided no reason for Stolworthy's pending departure, but Stolworthy ruffled some feathers early in his tenure when he issued a report outlining problems with employee overtime. A memo he wrote to Rauner noted that a higher-than-usual number of prison guards called off work on Super Bowl Sunday, driving up overtime costs at a number of prisons. Union officials say some of that February 1st spike was due to a major snowstorm that left some workers unable to report to their posts. Stolworthy's memo also noted that sick time and overtime rules covering employees who are members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union have created staffing pressures that lead to higher costs. The agency has been embroiled in lawsuits over living conditions, health care, and mental health treatment. There are more than 48,000 inmates living in facilities built to house 32,000 prisoners. Stolworthy's position is subject to confirmation by the Illinois Senate. A hearing on his appointment has not been scheduled. In his previous position, Stolworthy managed the construction of prisons in Iraq as the Deputy Director of Operations and Warden Advisor while working for the State Department and U.S. Justice Department. He also worked for the Alaska Department of Corrections and worked as a Special Assistant to the Governor of Alaska, as a legislative aide to the member of the Alaska House of Representatives, and as the Division Director. Medical marijuana pilot program extension headed to Rauner. Springfield. The Illinois Senate approved significant changes to the state's drug laws Thursday, including a plan to decrease punishment for possessing small amounts of marijuana and extending the state's medical marijuana pilot program. Both measures now head to Governor Bruce Rauner for his signature. The legislation decriminalizing pot possession lowers the punishment for those possessing 15 grams or less of the still illegal drug, with a maximum fine of $125 and no jail time. State Senator Kwame Raoul, Democrat of Chicago, said nearly half of Americans have admitted to using marijuana at least once. Should nearly half of all Americans be labeled a criminal? Asked Raoul. Among those opposed was State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, who said that there is no provision for multiple offenders. So we're going to call it decriminalization with this unlimited number of times you can pay $125, Rose said, pointing to driver's licenses, which can be suspended if people receive multiple tickets. Some Republicans, however, spoke in favor of the legislation. The people of Illinois continually told me that they want their government to give them more freedom over their decisions, especially those decisions which aren't having an impact on others, said State Senator Jason Berrickman, Republican of Bloomington. The measure was approved on a 37-19 vote. Among those voting yes on House Bill 218 were Berrickman, Andy Menar, Democrat of Bunker Hill, Toy Hutchison, Democrat of Olympia Fields, and Donnie Trotter, Democrat of Chicago. Among those voting no were Rose, Tim Bivens, Republican of Dixon, Bill Brady, Republican of Bloomington, Gary Forby, Democrat of Benton, Darren LaHood, Republican of Dunlap, Dave Lukenfeld, Republican of Okawville, and Dale Ryder, Republican of Mattoon. Rauner spokesman Catherine Kelly offered no insight on the governor's position. The governor will carefully consider any legislation that crosses his desk, Kelly said. The Illinois Department of Corrections predicts the legislation will save the state about $30 million. Meanwhile, the Senate also advanced legislation to extend the pilot program for medical marijuana. The program was set to expire in 2018, but now extends the date to 4 years after the first medical pot dispensaries open. The program has been plagued by a slow start, leaving investors little time to recoup their money once pot sales begin. Ryder said that there is still time to allow the program to work before extending the pilot dates. What I'm suggesting is that even though we're relatively early in the process, let's just sort of percolate for a while, Ryder said. House Bill 3299 was sent to Rauner on a 33-16 vote. On Biz, Dynagraphics / Wood Printing, Jenner Precision, J&R Collision Centers. Two long-time Decatur companies are in the process of combining services to offer customers a more complete package of printing capabilities. Dynagraphics, Fast Impressions, and Wood Printing are merging to become Dynagraphics Wood Printing. The two companies have been working together at times to meet customer needs over the past several years, said Scott Bowers, Dynagraphics Vice President. Working together on a more formal basis will be helpful as changes to technology continue to occur, Bowers said. The combination allows for the companies to provide a more connected approach, said Jim Ashby, Wood Printing's general sales manager and co-owner who will work as a sales and marketing executive for the combined business. We developed a good relationship with their sales staff, Bowers said. We will now have a full offering to both customer bases. The combined company will be based in the Dynagraphics facility at 3220 North Woodford Street, with plans to install a new 5-color printer this summer. Dynagraphics has operated out of the facility since 2003, and Bowers said it offers room for additional expansion possibilities. Some staff from Wood Printing has been moving there already, with plans to have everybody moved once the printer is fully operational, Bowers said. The Wood Printing staff includes industry veterans who can expand on the expertise the companies offer, he said. As part of its rebranding efforts, the combined company hired Amanda Drain as its new marketing director. Once everything is in place at the Dynagraphics facility, Ashby hopes to sell Wood Printing equipment. Its current printer can't be moved because the company wants to continually operate without any downtime, he said. Wood Printing has been in business since 1954. Dynagraphics offers services such as vehicle wraps and banners, while Wood Printing specialized in printed materials such as direct mail pieces. For information or services, call 217-876-9950. That's 876-9950. Agriculture equipment dealer with operations in Harristown has changed its name. Straight Line Ag, a division of Jenner Ag, has been renamed Jenner Precision. That's all we have time for the Decatur Herald and Review edition of dated May 22nd, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. Have a great weekend and week to follow. I look forward to reading with you again soon.